Happy Yisroel Chag, everybody. Today's daf in Masechet Shkalim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Gimel. So we're holding right on top over here at Chavraya B'Shem Rabbi Yochanan. So we said what we talked about yesterday, the last thing we spoke about. So we had the definitions of what the Svaras are for Rabbi Shimon and what the Svaras are for Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, who quoted Rabbi Shimon, that the nafkamina between them was whether if somebody gave a nekeva as an eila, whether it's the same thing as giving a nekeva for your Korban Pesach or giving for a nekeva for your asham, in which case, according to Rabbi Shimon, it would not be shayach to Kedush Zaguf and it would not become a tumura. If you try to make it a tumura, and you would be able to sell it. So according to the Rabbi Shimon quoted in the Mishnah Stam, there was a difference, because since the Eila, and we could say in the broadest sense of the word, could be in a keva, as Rabbi Yochanan explained, because as an oaf, it can be in a keva. So Mamela, this one case where you give the nekeva, where it would be chal, even on an animal that, even on a korban that is not shaykh to being in a keva, such as eila, pesach and arsham, is the case of the eila, because an eila, had it been an oaf, it would have been able to be in a keva. That's what we said was the difference between them. And according to Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, B'Shem Rabbi Shimon, there's no case where we would accept that. So Chavraya, B'Shem Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Ivo Bar Nagre said in front of Rabbi Law, he quoted Rabbi Yochanan. Basically, let's try to understand the Taima Dehain Tanya, at the basis of what Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, which we learned before, about not making any kind of distinction between the three korbanos that cannot be a nekeva, Eila, Pesach, or Asha, is again the pasuk that has to do with pidyon. Now, as we learned before, it says, "Ve'im kol behemat tmeya, asher lo yakrivu mimena korban laHashem." So we have this fascinating pasuk that says that if you have a behemat tmeya, which you cannot bring as a korban laHashem, that's a little weird. I mean, if you have a behemat tmeya, I mean, I don't have to say you can't bring it as a korban laHashem, can I? And it says over there, ve'amidata kohen lifnei, amidata beimah lifnei kohen, ve'richota kohen. I mean, that is crazy. There is no din, as we know, of ha'amada v'ha'arocha on a behima t'meya. I mean, because it's not shayach b'chlal to the mizbeach. It can't get kedushas haguf. Not to mention the fact that right afterwards, the pasuk actually says that in the event that you have a behima t'meya, I mean, I shouldn't say right afterwards, but in the event that you have a behima t'meya, then yeah, you should be poded. It doesn't say anything about Hamad of Arocha. So now, Ma Tamud Lomar Tmeya. Can you explain to me what it means when it says Behemat Tmeya? I mean, because Lamaisa, a little bit later we have the Pasuk, Ve'im Ba Behemah Tmeya, Ufada Be'erkecha. There's no din of Hamad of Arocha. It says Beferish, if you have a Behemat Tmeya, so then just go ahead and be poded. So what this means, they claim, Rabbi Yochanan said, what this means, not that it's tmeya, it means it's unusable bo'oto hashem. In other words, if it were given for a purpose that it cannot be used for, so then the halacha is that it's considered to me, nonetheless, the equivalent of a behema tmeya. Now, certainly if I give a nekeva for this particular purpose, and I don't care whether it's an asham, whether it's a pesach, or whether it's an oila, just ask yourself, can I use this animal for the purpose for which it was mukdash? Yes or no? Just give me the answer. Don't give me all of these fancy discussions about whether, well, theoretically, if it was a bird, yeah, and if my grandmother was a trolley, I mean, come on. So what in the world would the pasuk tell me? It's telling me that if it's tmeya for that purpose, then you can just go ahead and be poda it. What do you mean you can just go ahead and be poda it? What's the matter with you? Read the end of the pasuk. It doesn't say you can go ahead and be poda it. It says, ve'hemida kohen ota, right? Hemida ota lifnei kohen ve'ericha kohen. That means you're saying it needs amon of aracha. So what are you telling me? You can just go ahead and be poda it. You're bringing a raya against yourself. This is saying that you cannot actually go and be poted. You'd have to wait till it get a mum. And I thought the whole point that Rabbi Shimon was saying is that you do not have to wait till it gets a mum, and it will not make a tamura because of the fact that it doesn't have kedushas aguf. So, I mean, what are you talking about here? It's backwards. Okay, that's true. Fine. You know what? Actually, we said it over wrong. It's really supposed to be a marker for Rabbi Shimon, not Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda's understanding of Rabbi Shimon. It's supposed to have been brought over here as a marker for why Rabbi Shimon said that if you make a behemoth for an Eilah, that it can be used. Here's what he really said. Now you'll understand. Rabbi Zeira b'shem Rabbi Lazar lo amar kein. He didn't say it the way we said it. He said it correctly. At least it looks more correct at the surface. Ela. V'imkol b'imat me'asher lo yakrivu mimeno korban la'ashem. Right? So now, we've got the words of behemoth teme'ah, which doesn't make any sense. And then we also have the word korban. I mean, all we needed to say is, v'imkol b'imasher lo yakrivu mimeno la'ashem, right? So what exactly are those two words telling me? The word korban and the word tameh. What it must be coming to tell me is that kol she'ena ru'uya likarev lo kan v'lo b'makom acher eino ose tamura. That if you have a behema which is completely and totally useless in any and all ways, so I wouldn't be able to bring it as a korban. Never. That and only that can be podui right away. And because of that, it doesn't have kedushas aguf. Masha ein kein, if it isn't something which cannot be a korban at all, and therefore would not be called tamea, such as a nekeva la'ola. Is a nekeva la'ola something that can never be brought la'ashem? No. I mean, a rovea, a nirva, that I understand. But this is something which is a nekeva la'ola. It certainly can be brought as a carbon somewhere. Therefore, yatsas nekeva la'ola, where even though it's not ru'uya for this case, so in other words, this is coming along the way Rabbi Zira is saying it now, is the exact opposite of what we said before. Never did I say that the point is that if it isn't ro'i for the specific purpose that you're bringing it. On the contrary, the whole point of the pasuk is saying if it isn't ro'i for any purpose, not for the specific purpose. There's sins over here, even though it's not ru'uya li karev kan, but it certainly is ru'uya li karev b'mokom acher. So it is, as an akeva, ro'i to be brought for other cases. Maybe that's the same as Rabbi Yochanan's statement. If it were a bird, you could bring it as an akeva. Said Rav Avi and Rabbi Bon, excuse me? This is ridiculous, your pshat. It's totally nuts. Consider for a moment a rovea and a nirva, okay? Is a rovea and a nirva roi for a carbon anywhere in the world? No. Okay, so according to you, what would be the din? It is the very thing that the pasuk is talking about over here. A behema, which is to me, and it's not roy, le korban la'ashem, right? Okay. So what's the din? It's ein ru'uya likarev lo kan, v'lo b'makom acher, and yet what is the beferish halacha v'roveh v'nirva? The beferish halacha in tamura is hare hein osim tamura. They do make a tamura. So your explanation of this pasuk is pretty crazy. Said Rabbi Zira, no, you misunderstood me. Actually, what I really meant was, afani lo amarti ela tmei'ah mamash. What I meant was not something that's not roi for this. I meant that it's something that is not kosher at all. But, I mean, if it comes from a mean that is kosher, so then, eino chinami. If it's something that is from a min that's kosher, then it would actually be able to make a tamura. Oh, yeah, that's what you meant, right? So then, can you please explain how it fits into pasuk? That's what we started with. And that's what we were doche from the very beginning, to explain that that is not possible. Read the next words in the pasuk. Kakasha. Bedakti vehemid harich. I understand. This pasuk is giving me the examples of something that I would need ha'amod of ha'arocha for. You're telling me that a behema tamea, I need hamada v'harach on a behema tamea? That's absolutely crazy. So, and besides that, I mean, it's beferish a few psikim later, it says that you don't need hamada v'harach. It says ve'imba behema tamea, upada be'erkecha, yosef chamishito alav, and so on, fine. But it doesn't say anything about a behemoth tamea here, so therefore, I don't care what pshat you're saying, every single one of your pshatim is completely nuts. And with that, we're docha Rabbi Zeir. The Gemara doesn't offer any kind of solution for how we're supposed to understand what he meant. And now we're ready for halacha hey, which brings us to our favorite kapitan. Well worth waiting for. Okay, so now we're moving on to some more easily understandable issues. This was quite a difficult sugya that we've just come through. Now we're going to talk about a din that we mentioned earlier when we were talking about one of the categories of the monies that were left over. You remember that one of those categories was defined as the extra sa'a. The extra sa'a was the saw that the supplier had to give in the event that there was a change in price, and he was mechuyev to supply at the lower price, even though it had been agreed that they were going to have a higher price. Remember that whole discussion? It became four saw per sella. Yes, now, okay, this is that Mishnah. So now we're going to talk about the way in which we set prices with suppliers. And this is suppliers of all those things that we sell. We're going to be making available for menachas, for nesachim, that includes the soles, the shemen, the yayin. So what do? Once every 30 days, we set the price that we are willing to pay from the lishka, and that price would be in effect no matter what happens for the next 30 days. And that secures us against any type of market mix-ups. We want to make sure that whatever we bought was bought at the lowest price available at the time, and that the supplier will continue to supply at that price. So let's say the supplier agrees to supply silatot mi arba. He's going to be supplying us four sa'a per sella. The next day, the price goes up, and now you can only buy three per sella. It's too bad for the supplier. He's got to supply us the original price, four saw per sella or bust. And if it were the other way around, let's say we agreed to pay him at a higher price, because that was the market price at the time, was the best price we could get, was three saw per sella. And then afterwards, the price falls. Now you could buy four per sella. He's got a supply at the new lower price. We're not stuck with the price. He's stuck at the price. Shiyad hegdesh ala elyonat. This is called keeping the upper hand. Yad ala elyonat. Same words that we use in English. You keep the upper hand. Im hitliyah solet. And then it's even worse than that for the supplier, because this supplier has got to give us goods that are guaranteed for use on the Mizbeach. So whenever he delivers over the course of that month, and he may deliver everything right off the bat, that stuff has got to be usable 30 days later. That flour, if it turns wormy, he's going to have to supply new flour. It's his problem, it's not our problem. If the wine overly ferments in the next 30 days, he's got to supply us new wine. So im hichmitza yain hichmitza lo. It's all his loss. As a matter of fact, he is not going to be paid until the mizbeach is satisfied. So inu mekabel meotav ad sheya mizbeach meratzeh, the actual korban had to have been brought, finished, then he collects his money. He doesn't get anything until we've actually used what it was that he supplied. Whereas, as we saw earlier, and we mentioned this before, Tani b'shem Rabbi Shimon, not true. We would pay up right away upon delivery. Miyada yumekabli mo'otav, and we really do not worry very much about having things not being usable, because the Kohanim were his reasoning. They kept a very close tabs on anything that was delivered, and they were always aware of its quality. The first chips, actually, that were for quality control were developed by the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore they would always be certain to be makrevit on the Mizbeach in time. And they never really needed to enforce the condition with the guy that he's got to give us new goods in the event that it goes bad. So there was no reason for us not to actually pay. Now, this brings us to another very important moment in our history, which is Hadran Alach Perek Atruma. Halacha Aleph in the fifth perek. Elu hein hamimunim shehayu bamikdash. Now, the Mishnah is going to list 15 different mimunim. Mimunim are people who were in charge, that were in charge of various functions. Now, there were other people that were in charge of other secondary functions that are listed in other Gemaras and in other Brises, but these are the ones that our Mishnah views as being central to the Beis HaMikdash. And what's interesting is that each one of these particular offices were named Lederes after the person that they're listed under here. Now, there's a machlokas in our sugya. What is this choice of the persons that are mentioned here, as we'll see? So these are the 15 people in charge. So Yochanan ben Pinchas, he was in charge of the Chotamot. And he was, in other words, what happened over here is that we had a very effective system for making sure that people would pay at a cash register, would get precisely what they paid for. You didn't walk over and buy a carbon and pay for the carbon when you bought it. What you first did is you went over to the kupah. In the kupah, you paid so that it was completely controlled. You paid precisely what the correct price was for what it was that you were buying. And then you were issued a ticket that showed that you were ro'i for that carbon. You presented that ticket where the kohanim were in charge of bringing that carbon, and then that carbon would be prepared for you. There was no handling of funds other than that. So then the one who was in charge over the Chotamot had a very important position, because as you can imagine, this was quite a complex bookkeeping operation and money operation and the printing operation and so on. So that was Yochanan ben Pinchas. Achia, he was in charge of the Nisachim. These Nisachim refer to all of the Nisachim. Doesn't mean literally the liquids and anything that was used for the carbon. Nisachim, which would include the solas and the shemen. And he had also a tremendous achrayas, because first of all, he had to make sure that everything was stored properly so that nothing would be spoiled. That was part of the kohanim reason. And he had to make sure that there was no chashash whatsoever any kind of tuma and so on. And he was also in charge of the actual sales when it comes to those particular things. So he was the one that the Chotamot would be presented for if somebody needed Nesachim. Obviously, there were other places where Chotamot were presented for other things, but he was therefore in very close touch with Yochanan ben Pinchas. Matia ben Shmuel, he was in charge over the payasot, which the Gemara in Yomot speaks about, what it is that was done every day to make sure that the correct person would get a chance either at the Keteres or that was selected for the various Avedas. Then Psachya, which the Gemara identifies, as you'll recall, with Mordechai Bilshan. So Psachya was in charge of the Kinim. The Kinim was a real mess because, as you remember from Maseches Kinim, any type of confusion, since these birds had a tendency to fly, as birds often do, they could get mixed up one in the other's kinim, and that could lead to horrific, complex problems. You needed to be a bookie otzum in math in order to be able to figure out what the dinim was for the various kinim. As I mentioned to you, my cousin, Rav Rabinovich Zatzal, who just was nifter this year, he got his doctorate in math from Hopkins, writing his doctorate about Maseches Kinim, which was subsequently published, but so you can see it is not a Pashut Sugya. So Psachia needed to have basically a doctorate in math. We'll see that he also had some other very important doctorates in language and so on. So Ptachia is Mordechai. And why did... What is that? Oh, that's
my
his
mother's gift to me in my 20th birthday.
Oh my gosh!
I thought I would appreciate it.
That's so nice. Can we see the cover? Is
I don't
oh, you lost the cover
anymore.
Huh?
Probability and statistical inference in ancient medieval Jewish literature.
Beautiful. Okay, so there you have it. So for once, I'm actually in Barnea's neighborhood. I can't imagine this list. My gosh.
But it made an impression because it showed how a Jewish child learning Baba Kama understood advanced logistical issues that were only discovered in the past century.
Amazing. Beautiful. Okay. Yeah, it's really crazy. All right. So Psach is actually, his real name is Mordechai. So why did we call the name of the this particular administration, we called it Psachia, not Mordechai? Because part of the need to be a boki, to be able to handle kinim, was, as we're going to see later on, was the interpretation of what the circumstances were that led to the chiyuv of the kinim. Because obviously, there's a difference between kinim that are going to be brought for zivas, leida, and so on, tzaras, versus kinim that are brought as oilos for karban teda, for stam nedava. And we'll see some stories in the Gemara about how it is that he was capable of psychologically getting right on target and understanding what it was that this woman was trying to say to him. Yodea b'shivim lashan, and he was also called this Mordechai Bilshan, as we'll see, because he was a baki in the Shivim Lashonos. So Shivim Lashonos is a reference to the primal Lashonos of the original Shivim Umos that are listed in among the Bnei Noach. Obviously, there are thousands of languages, but the Mekores are Shivim, according to the Gemara, and he was a Baki in all of them. Then we had other people. We had Ben Achia, who was actually Dr. Ben Achia, and he was in charge of gastro problems. Al-Choli Me'ayim. And the word is going to explain that Kohanim had a lot of trouble with their tummies. And there were two reasons why they had a lot of trouble with their tummies. One was because they ate tons of meat. And that's all they ate. And apparently, Dr. Ben Achia did not believe in the Atkins diet. And another thing that went wrong was that they were always freezing because their toesies were right there on that cold stone floor. And that made them susceptible to various intestinal bacteria and viruses, and he needed to know how to cure them. But maybe the worst part of it is that they had to eat meat without wine. Can you imagine they ate meat and they drank water? One intelligent person drinks water, especially when water is filled with all type of fascinating flora. And therefore, they got sick. So they needed a good doctor there to take care of it. Now, Nechunya, he was the famous Chofer Shichin. We'll see the story of him. You may remember the beautiful stories of Nechunya Chofer Shichin from the Tainis. Ben Gever on the Ilat Sharim. Mr. Ben Gever was in charge of locking the Sharim at night.
Vinny Cruz. Let me skip two words.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Gavini was the Karuz, which you'll notice Barnea has taken his job in general terms, so that he was the guy that was able to, or he was famous with his voice, let me tell you. So he basically said when it was time to do the various things, the time for the Tomid and the time for the singing of the Levium and things like that. Machlokas Rishonim, whether he actually announced everything or whether it was just certain things. Ben Gever al Ne'ilat Sha'arim, he was in charge of opening in the morning and locking at night. Ben Bevai was Mumuna al Hapakia. The Pakia was the threads that were going to be used, which is what the Gemara over here holds, but it's not what the Gemara in the Bavli holds. The Gemara in the Bavli, remember, ended up saying that what he does is he beats up people. so that if he finds anybody asleep, then he was the one that beat them up. But over here we learned that the Pakia means the actual Pakia. The Pakia means the making of wicks out of the, what do you call a spool? Out of spools of raw wool. So there's two completely different approaches of what a Pakia is. Ben Arza was in charge of the Tzilzal. So the Tzilzal were the symbols, and that was the beginning of the singing of the Levium. And also, he led the orchestra, it seems from other places. And Hugras Ben Levi, he was in charge of the choir of the Levium. So he was Al Hashir, and he would be the one that would conduct the actual singing. Beit Garmo, as we saw before, they were in charge of making the Lechem HaPanim, and only they knew how to actually stand up the Lechem HaPanim in a way that it wouldn't collapse. Beit Aftivnas, as we saw before, they were the ones that were responsible for the Maisa HaKetores, and again, we saw before that they were the only ones who knew what Mala Ashan was, and they refused to give out of any of that information to anyone else. They had a monopoly on the Asiya of the Keteres. Elazar was in charge of the Porochot, and there were 13 Porochot, as we learn in Yuma, that were used. They were in front of the various Sha'arim, besides, obviously, the Porochot between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and so on. They would, every single year, the main Porochot in the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kadoshim, they would make new ones. So he was the one that was in charge of making those Porochot. Pinchas was the Malbish, and he had, remember, that Lishka that was next to the entranceway into the Ezras Yisrael. And he was the one who would make certain that the Big Day Kahuna fit, and that they were put on properly, and that they were stored when the Kohanim weren't wearing it. Now, the Beis HaMikdash HaSheni was a rather long-lasted structure, you'll recall. It was Gadoya Abayit Hazeh. It was 420 years. Now, it's obviously not the same person who's going to be considered to be the one in charge for all of those years. I mean, it's all very nice to say that maybe Mordechai Bilshan, you know, was there and he was at the beginning and so on. But I mean, like, why are we utilizing the names of a particular person for the description of an office? So that's a big machlokas. Reb Chizkia, Omer Rabbi Simon, and the Rabbanan argue. So over here, Rabbi Simon argues with the Rabbanan. Rabbi Simon is Reb Shimon ben Pazi. And he says, one of them says anyway, that basically what we did was that we took over all of those 420 years, we took the example of the most amazing individual that did that job, and he became the way that we refer to that job, Lederes. So we took the Ksheirei Dor Vador, and therefore these names represent the absolute best that could be. But obviously, that doesn't mean that they were all contemporaries. I mean, so maybe Mordechai Bilshan and Psachir was right at the beginning. Maybe Pinchas HaMalbish was at the end. I mean, we don't know each one what particular dor he was, but he did a fantastic job. And because of that, in Zecher of that job, he was the one whose name was attached to the job. Harona Amar, we're not sure whether it's Rabbi Simon or whether it's Chachamim, who says what, but Harona Amar, Misha Yaboto Dor, Mana Basha Bedora. Not true. The Tana, who wrote this, he simply was giving over to the people in his door the people that were there. So Dafka, they were all there at the same time. When precisely that was, don't know. So, I mean, to say that Psachia, we said, was Mordechai, It's not clear. So, in Achinami, some of the Mefarshim say that it means that at the Tana of the Mishnah comes, this Mishnah was composed at the time of Mordechai. So that means that all of these were there according to this approach, were there at the beginning, the very beginning of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gra says that the people that actually worked after that first door, they took that name on themselves. They called, like, Paro is Paro, Psachia is Psachia, and every generation of a Psachia is Psachia. So then that would mean that they, in effect, they all were contemporaries, but they were contemporaries because they had taken on the names of others. Now, the problem is that we're including over here a number of problematic individuals, not only individuals, but entire mishpachas, because we're including Beis Aftidnas, we're including Beis Garmo, and we're including Hugras HaLevi, right? The problem is that there's a Mishnah in Yuma that's got some very bad things to say about those people. And the Mishnah over there, which is a continuation of this Mishnah, it's really weird, because over there, the Mishnah begins by saying that there were people that did amazing things. There was Mon Bas HaMelech and Aline HaMalka and Ben Katin and Ben Gamla. So they all gave improvements to Beis HaMikdash. They made the beautiful plaque for the Saita that could be used, or they added the Yud Beis Dadin to the Kiyor. They made the handles of everything out of gold. Each one did something else. The Niknor had his Nisim with the beautiful doors for the Beis HaMikdash. And it says that these were very, very chashuva people. And because of that, at the end, it says that Zecher Tzadik Livracha is said about those people. Then it goes into a Mishnah that mentions Dafka Beis Garmo, Dafka Beis Aftino, and Dafka Hugras HaLevi. And it says that because they did not want to teach anybody else what it is that they did, how they could do it, so either they didn't teach how to make the lechem be able to stand, or Beit Aftinas didn't want to share what Mala Oshon was, or Hugras HaLevi didn't want to share the way that he knew a specific Perek Beshira, and so on. They said in the Mishnah that on those kind of people, Shem Rishaim Yirkav. So, I mean, if we're going to say that this is all the best people in history, how could the Mishnah over there possibly have said the Zecher Tzadik Livracha only on those that were listed and not on the others, and in fact call these Kisherim Shebechol Dar Vadar, we were going to call them Rishaim? So therefore, we have to figure out how we're going to go according to those two cheetahs. So according to the Man D'Yomar, the Gearsayer is confused. So let's just read it truto, but there's a lot of different ways to learn this. So Man D'Yomar, Kisherei Kol Dor V'Dor Bolim Nod. So then what we'll have to say is that on all of the above, Aleihem Omer, that even the Mishpachas Beis Garmo Beis Aftinos Hugras HaLevi, the Mishnah over there was also saying Zecher Letzadik Livracha, and not only on Monbaz and on Aline HaMalka and so on and so forth, and that the reference was to all of them. And that would mean that the second part was only a reference to Ben Kamtzar, who was mentioned over there, as he knew how to write with all of his fingers simultaneously, could make four different copies of the same thing, and he didn't want to share, and it was only about him that it says, Shem Rishaim Yirkav. Masha Enkein. The Man D'Yomar Mishaya Boto Dor Mana Masha Bedoro. If we just happened to have selected the people at random because they were in the door of that Tana, so then you learn the Mishnah and Yuma Bepashtas. Then Al Kulam Hu Omer V'Shem Rishaim Yirkav. So then we could include Hugras, we could include Aftinus, we could include Beis Garmo, and like the Pashtus of how to learn it, because originally we thought that they were Rishoyim for not being willing to share what it is that they got in their Mesira of their family. And then when it says Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that would only be indeed the mention about Ben Katin and about Alini Amalka and so on. So those things that were in the Mishnah before, yes. So that was Munbaz HaMelech Ben Gamla, Niknar with his Delatot Shanasu Nisim. Those are the only ones that we were saying necessarily Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So it's a very different way of understanding the whole sugya in Yuma. Omer Rabbi Yonah, you should know that when it says the idea of Ledoros, that there would be such a thing as a Achalek Lo Berabim, this is what the Navi says in Yeshayo, Lachain Achalek Lo Berabim, Ve'et Atzumim Yechalek Shalal, Tachat Asher Hera Lamavet Nafsho, Ve'et Porshim Nimne V'hu Chet Rabim Nasa, this is all in the famous Christian stolen Perek, in which it's a reference to God's great servant that they identify not with Yisrael, of course, but with some mamzer. So anyway, this is really a reference to the particular individual as well that you could say, somebody that was Ranafsho, that he was mamish, he gave over his soul to die, as an Eved Hashem, that is a reference to Rabbi Akiva. So, Lachain, Kisiv, Lachain Achalek L'Rabim, Vet Atzumim Yechalek Shalal, he will get a part of the spoils with the greatest in history. That's referring to Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva was Matkin, the earliest versions of the Mishnayos, Mishnah, Medrash, Halachas, Haggadahs. He was the one that set that all up in its most primitive form, which afterwards, after all of those Doros, Rebbe sifted through and created a version that could be given over as a way that Klal Yisrael should learn the Mishnah, which, of course, needed to have a special takana that it should be mutter to do such a thing, and then eventually to allow it to be actually written down, which is even a greater violation. But as the Rambam explains, you are not allowed to have a particular version of a Mishnah to learn from for everybody at all. Forget about writing it down. So the entire idea of structuring Teresh HaBaal Peh begins with Rabbi Akiva here. And this is sort of a proto-Mishnah that he creates. And this becomes, in the end, the Teresh HaBaal Peh. Some say, V'yesh Omrim, it's a reference to Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. All of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, this earliest version of the Ur Mishnah, that came from the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, and remember that was part of the Takana of the change from the time of Purim. And that's why that it includes the whole acceptance of Teresh HaBaal Peh at the time of Purim and Mordechai Bilshan in this list. That's because these were all the members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah that set that up. That is not what Rabbi Akiva did. By the way, I just want to make a comment over here that I think is important to take into consideration. And that is that, Barnea, you gave me that gift, which was very kind of you, of the copy of the Yerushalmi from the Talmud Eretz Yisrael. I must say it has a very, very strong Tam Livgam in it. And a part of its Tam Livgam, not just the secularism of it in terms of the so-called scientific approach, but a fundamental misunderstanding of everything that the Teresh HaBaal Peh is supposed to be in terms of how it's given to us. I'm sure all of you are aware that the great Chokrim, supposedly, who care nothing for the real meaning of the what it is that a Gemara is saying, they spend most of their time doing such things as comparing girsaot, analyzing personalities, knowing the historical placement of the various people, and seeing how those things interrelate with their times and with their language, and so on and so forth. And this is considered to be a very useful and meaningful use of time and a great way to encourage Klal Yisrael to be more deeply connected to their Messiah, where in reality it is everything that does exactly the opposite. The entire point of the writing down of Teresh HaBaal Peh from the very beginning was specifically done in a way that would not be definitive. The various girsaot that we have are part of an overall picture of alternatives. They're not just people lost track. People lost track because there were different ways that they were supposed to lose track. In exactly the same way that Rebbe opens the sugya of every Mishnah to so many different approaches, that the Gemara said he consistently had at least 13 different approaches to every Mishnah. The Gemara will go through four or five of those approaches. Those are not mechkarim. Those are a recognition of the interdimensionality and the way in which there's the hypertext of the various issues. And by the way, this is true even about stories. Another favorite thing that these brilliant chokrim do is compare the versions of stories. You know, it's like somebody would take these Hasidish and Maisalach and say, well, but as you know, in Samarkand, they say over the story like this. But it's like, who the heck cares? The point, obviously, of any of those issues is to get across the particular meaning and not the detail of what it was that happened. The detail could be made up. I mean, the same thing as the Medrash. The Medrash always makes up details. It's trying to bring out an idea. So it's telling you, okay, so you can imagine the discussion. I mean, the discussion happens in this particular way with these particular words. So Hashem said to Moshe, oh, so let's be medayek. So Hashem said to Moshe, according to Rabbi Ben Yoyer, come off it. Obviously, the entire idea is that since we're dealing with Teresh about that, we are dealing with waves and wavelets all the time. To sit around and waste your time and try to discuss on what is, in fact, the definitive girsa, when there's really no concern for there being a definitive girsa, is a little bit ridiculous. And it causes Klal Yisrael to lose track of what they're supposed to be involved in. They're supposed to be involved in a flow of Torah that expresses the very concept of orality. And that concept is exactly this point of constantly getting mixed up and reinterpreting and Bechol Dor V'Dor and so on and so forth. And so therefore, to put out these kind of things and to make it sound like, well, none of it means anything anyway, because who knows what the right gears is. It's just basically what a person comes out feeling. You know, nobody really knows what anybody meant, which is true, but it's true for the exact opposite reason. It's because you need to figure out what your approach is to what anybody meant, for heaven's sake, exactly as what happens within the Gemara itself. Like we had today, Rabbi Zira says, well, I guess what I really meant was, you don't know yourself what you really meant. Maybe I meant that. Maybe I meant this. And then we finally say, look, none of your pshat didn't make any sense. You didn't mean anything. And we go on and leave him hanging. I mean, that's classic, classic way in which Teresh Rabbeinu is meant to be learned, understood. And again, as I've pointed out, it's the reason that we have all of the idiosyncrasies of everybody, all of their, I mean, the crazy story we had of, what do you expect from me? I'm nuts. I kick people under the table. Of course I do. You would do if you were crazy like me. What kind of crazy thing is that to put into a Gemara? That's exactly the point. If you don't relate to what it is that these people are feeling, experiencing, and as it is that they're developing the Teresh Rabbeinu, you're not part of it. You're just a choker. And it's very unfortunate that it's not only the chokrim that are so completely alienated from the flow of Torah, but that even those that supposedly learn Torah have lost the humor, have lost the fun, have lost the risque elements. Everything is like, has to be explained away. I'll explain everything away, including humor, so that nobody has any personality anymore after you go through that kind of thing. So I just think that's an important nakuda over here as well, because we have a lot of, as we see here, even different approaches. Who are the Shem Rishoyim Yirkav, and who is the Tzaddik, when we're going to say Zecher Tzaddik Livrocha. And so when we're talking about the various stages of the formation of a Mishnah, we know that there were obviously many, many different earlier things that came from the Anshei Knesset HaGdela. We know that the Sidrei HaMishnah, the concept of Sidorim and Mesechtos, was there even before Rabbi Akiva. And the question is, okay, when exactly does it come from? What the Gemara is saying over here is that the Anshei Knesset HaGdela were metaking those basic structures. That makes a great deal of sense, because that's part of the entire changeover of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. And another thing, again, as I've pointed out, Masechet Avot begins with the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, which is a crazy thing, right? Shel Shimon HaTzadik Mishiorei Anshei Knesset HaGdola Hu Haya Omer. I don't understand. Moshe Rabbeinu had nothing to say, and Yoshua had nothing to say, and Yeshayahu had nothing to say, and David had nothing to say. I mean, nobody had anything to say until Shimon HaTzadik. What is that supposed to mean? And how do you call that Avot? These are the Avot. The Avot don't begin before that. So you see very clearly they had in mind a completely new vision that was going to be capable of lasting Yisrael through the period of Hester, and that's the Ra'u Or Gadol. That's Talmud Bavli, that the people, the Am HaHolech B'Choshech, in the end would come out being Ra'u Or Gadol because of the very takona of the structures that they provided that allowed us to explore more and more detail in those structures. That was the reason why we're saying now that this is a Chalek Lo Barabim. So that even though Moshe Rabbeinu, yes, he was the one that gave the Torah, but take a look at what these people did to make that a Torah that would be Nogeah, Klal Yisrael L'Doreis. So Yesh Omrim is a reference to the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. They made this initial stakonos. And when we know, of course, Rabbi Akiva did give us very fundamental kind of structures. But what were those structures that Rabbi Akiva, we're talking about over here, was the one that he achieved? He was the one that gave the klolos and the protos. So basically, what he did is he gave us the numerations when we had all of the various dinim. And those were the things that were all of the klal and prat that appear in the midah shatera nidreshes pahem and so on. Those were the things that he set up in that way. Omer Rabbi Abo, you could see another point in this when it says, all the way back, this is all the way from Divrei HaYomim, and over there we're talking about the people that were that came from Salma. So it says that they were Mishpechot Sofrim Yoshvei Yabetz. Now we understand this to mean that these were the Talmidei Chachamim that were learning with Osniel ben Knaz. Osniel ben Knaz was the one who was able to be machzir the halachas that were forgotten at the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, when everybody was ready to kill Yehoshua. And he had such an incredible grasp of Teshuvah Baal Peh at that early time that he was able to reconstruct the halachas. Obviously, they didn't have the din of halacha Moshe B'Sinai because they were reconstructed, but he was able to reconstruct them. And it says over there that these were Mishpachot Sofrim. So that means that we call these early Talmidei Chachamim Sofrim. Why do we call them Sofrim? Which means literally people who count. I mean, what does counting have to do with it? Because they made the Torah into Sforot, Sforot. What they did is they structured sets, and those sets became ways that people would be capable of maintaining their knowledge of various sugyas. For instance, Chamisha lo yitrumu, Chamisha dvorim chayomim b'chala, Chamesh esrei noshim potrot tzoroteim v'tzorot tzoroteim, Shoshim v'sheish krisus b'tora, Shoish Esrei Dvorim Nemru B'Nivlas Oif HaTohar, Arba Aves Nezikin, Aves Melachas Arborim Chosarachas, and so on and so forth. Probably even including our Mishnah of the Chamesh Esrei Minuyim that we have in the Beis HaMikdash. We find the other sense of Sefer, Om Rebbe Acha, I'll finish, I know I'm keeping you too long. Om Rebbe Acha, K'tiv LeEzra HaKohen HaSofer. Why do we call Ezra HaSofer Bichlal? So what is the idea? It says over there, LeEzra HaKohen HaSofer, Sofer Divrei Mitzvot Hashem. What is Sofer? HaSofer, Sofer. What is that? Ma'ata Balomer Sofer, after saying HaSofer. It's telling us, Elikishem, Shehaya Sofer B'Divrei Torah. So just as he was literally counted the words of the Sefer Torah, like the Gemara says in the Bavli, Shaya Sofrim, they would count the Oishas in the Torah, and they would be able to give over the Misera, and that this is letter number X, and that this appears in a different place, and this is half of the Isis in the Torah, and these are half of the words of the Torah, and these letters are meant to be larger, and these letters are meant to be smaller. Every single letter is marked in the Masorah by a reference to every other place that it's Nogea. That is the Sofer, that he was not only Sofer B'divrei Torah, but Kach Haya Sofer B'divrei Chachamim. He would also do the same thing as putting together the way in which the different sugyas were mentioned, that Rabbi Yehuda said this in 23 different places, and so on and so forth. In other words, the different approaches up to his time, he would actually be Sofer in Torah Shebaal Peh. So we see that this concept of putting things together was a very powerful concept that was part of the actual binyan of the Beis HaMikdash Hasheni by Ezra. And that means, it's a very important point, because it means that when we say that the Anshei Knesset HaGdela were the ones who created the earliest structures, those structures were translated by Ezra into the actual building of the Beis HaMikdash and the way in which the Am would develop around that Beis HaMikdash. That's why the Gemara finds it necessary over here to put together the different aspects of what it was that they were doing, how this stretched over all of those doyres. What better place to put it than in this perek, which is trying to integrate all of these generations into the name of a single individual who represented one aspect of those 15 issues that the Mishnah sets up at the beginning. It is such a consistent sugya, such a beautiful sugya. How it is that you want to look at those 15? How do they relate to the various deres? And these deres, Yeshayahu HaNavi announced in advance that there was a Moshe Rabbeinu, but there's going to be something that is just as great, Achalek Lo Berabim, and he's going to have part of the Shalal that was given over to the original, those who were Mekabel Torah. So it's a beautiful, beautiful introduction to the concepts of our Perek and to the entire structure of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, which is why the individuals are listed here. The names of the jobs aren't listed. It's the people that are listed. And that's the mocker of that idea. Achalek lo barabim, that we go back to always. Notice, by the way, how much importance this was throughout our Masechet here in Shkolim. And especially as Rebbe Zero, as we just dropped him out of the running over there. And he was the one that was so makpid to know exactly the person that told you something. It's the person that counts. Do you know him? No? Then why are you quoting him? How can you quote him if you don't know him? Do you see him in front of your eyes when you mention his name? So then how do you quote him? How can we rely on you to quote him? It's an unbelievable insight, which connects directly. 100% maybe Geula L'Olam. Beautiful. Thank you, Rabbi Arnia. A beautiful, beautiful point. The main issue was a very beautiful one in which the Eloheina Mimunim turned out to be a very strange way of referring to all of the 15 different special jobs or appointments that were there in the Beis HaMikdash that were named instead of by the appointment, they were named for the individual that held them. So the question was why we do that and whether these individuals represent the best of all of the generations, or whether they represent the beginning of the first generation, including Mordechai and the various other shitas. And it turned out that the Gemara ended up going into, surprisingly, at least on the surface, going into the question of the entire structure of the development of Mishnah, Agadah, the drushas, the way in which the Mishnayos are arranged, the Siddurim, the Klolim, the Pratim, and all types of inyanim that have to do with the entire structure of Torah Shebaal Peh. So what we came to understand was that Lamaisa, the inclusion of Psachya as Mordechai Bilshan specifically from the time of the entire Purim story is very central here, because basically that was the time in which we find the Anshei Knesset HaGdela, which is the way the Gemara comes out, the Anshei Knesset HaGdela setting up this sort of Ur Mishnah, in which the main concepts of the structure are defined, even though they're not written down in any way, and they're not put into a format that you're allowed to utilize as a final structure to teach people with and so on. but that people would be able to have access to generalities and then start working things out. And that was followed by a lot of work with Rabbi Akiva, who worked on the various Midah Shatar and Adreshes Behem. And we went then to analyze the nature of Seferim and Ezra HaSefer, the interrelationship of the development of Teresh Baal Peh in terms of numbers. And we went through quite a few examples of Mishnayos that are structured according to numbers, particularly, you know, like the Lamates Melachas, or like the Arbaves Nezikin, or like the Shloshes Dvarim Nemru Benivlas of Tar, and so on and so forth. And all of that, we understood the reason that it's mentioned over here is because the truth is that Teresh Baal Peh was the main achievement of the Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim, because Teresh Baal Peh was the problem of Kafalim Har Chagigah, so that in Purim, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah set down the establishment of how, in a time of Hester, Teresh Baal Peh is called Hester, it's called Cheshech, HaMelech B'Cheshech, Ro Or Godol, which is the Talmud Bavli particularly, is Cheshech, and that was a tikkun of Bavel, which became the way in which during the entire time of the Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, the idea of not having Nisim and not having an Orin was all the way in which we related to Teresh Baal Peh particularly. And it starts with Ezra HaSofer, who begins the idea of the Sefer, of creating the Mesera of the Osius of the Torah, and then goes on to talk about the way in which there was enumeration that had to do with the structure of Teresh Baal Peh as well. So this was the period of the transition from the focus on Teresh B'Ksav to Teresh Baal Peh, something that was central to the entire period of the Golas Bavel, and the transition that began with the Charash and the Masger, with the people that were the Bekiim in Teresh Baal Peh that were nigla to Bavel in order to establish the way in which Klal Yisrael would survive this entire period. And because of that, we got into all of the things that were achieved and the way in which Teresh Baal Peh is meant to be understood and the Chilufei Girsaot and why there's so many Chilufei Girsaot and what it is that we're supposed to be concentrating on and learning and so on and so forth. Ari, I see you've got quite some problems over there with meteorites striking and so on, which is really very nice, but maybe you could keep out of the way of any of those strikes so that we could at least make sure that you survive. Yes, thank you. It was very exciting, though, I must say. All right, Calvin. Enjoy. Okay, so we had gotten this. So because everybody figured that you would enjoy the continuation over here, so we had gotten up to, we could just maybe review just like the last few things that we learned so that it goes smoothly into the continuation of the daf. So maybe let's start on the sixth line on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. We were talking about Mishpachot Sofrim Yoshve Ya'abetz, and this was really the first time that we have the real power of Teresh Baal Peh put into place. This was at the time of Ya'abetz, who was Osniel ben Knaz, where the Gemara says that Osniel ben Knaz was able to utilize the Keach of Teresh Baal Peh to reconstruct the halachas l'meshem Sinai, which could be 3,000 halachas, according to one sheet that had been lost, at the time of the death of Moshe Rabbeinu and the transition to Yoshua, which, of course, is the first stage of the importance of Teresh Baal Peh, where it was the end of a Teresh B'Ksav, at least the Chamesh Chumshei Torah. So why are they called Sofrim? She'asu HaTorah Svorot Svorot, for instance. So they created sets, and these sets, Chamesh Lo Yitrumu, Chamesh Dvarim Chayavim B'Challah, Chamesh Esrei Nashim Potrot Tzorotayim Min Ayibum, Shoshim V'Shesh Krisis B'Torah, Shlosh Esrei Dvarim Nemru B'Nivlas Eftar, Arba Avot Nezikin, Avot Melochas, Arbaim Chasrachas, and so on. Omer Rebacha, it says Ezra HaKohen HaSofer, and then it adds another word, Sofer, right afterwards again. Ezra HaKohen Sofer, and sofer, that he was the sofer, divrei mitzvot Hashem v'chukav Yisrael. What is the point of repeating sofer, sofer? Elo kishem shaya sofer b'divrei Torah, kach haya sofer b'divrei Chachamim. The same way that he set up the Mesera, in terms of all of the letters of the Torah, and the words of the Torah, and the Chaseras, Yiseras, and so on, which became the whole unbelievably complex and detailed Mesera that we have. So too, he used to do this with the Divrei Chachamim as well, so that he was very much a focus on the sets that we need to know. Rabbi Chagai b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman says, look, if you take a look at what the earlier Rishonim did at the beginning of all of this work, before we had a Gemara and all of these things that are just given on silver platters to everybody. So Harishonim Charshu Vizaru. Remember that we compare Yedidya, you could stop hiding there. We see you. So we compare all the time the Torah Lechulachmu Balachmi. So we compare it to Girsa, Gimgores, chewing, eating, Shulchan Orech, the Shulchan Orech that's meant to be the way in which we relate to the Mishpatei HaTorah. So therefore, we continue that metaphor. So they did all of the work for us. They plowed, they planted, they weeded, they were koseach. Koseach would be like cutting down. They were oder, so they hoed things, and then they were kotzer, so they harvested. Then they gathered up all of the grain, and then they threshed it, dashu, zaru, bararu, they threshed it, and they winnowed it, and they went through borer to get the best parts of it, they sifted it, and then they ground it, and they kneaded it, dashu, kitfu, afu, they made the pretty challahs, so to speak, they baked the challahs, and the correct Gersa here, I believe, is va'anu ein lanu pelechol. The problem is we don't even have a mouth to eat with, so what good is it, because we got no brains. So all of this incredible work, which was yetei muchan la'achila, which was the idea of the Shulchan Aruch, it's all very nice, but not if you have people without mouths, which, I mean, in this case means brains. So what good does it do us? Reb Abba Bar Zmina b'shem Reb Zira says, look, I mean, if you're talking about intelligence, you know, if those early deris were considered to be like malachim, which is the way we look at them, so then, okay, in comparison to them, we are human. But if you're going to call those people human, then you can only call yourself a donkey, because, I mean, you have absolutely nothing in common with them. Omer Rabbi Mana, let me tell you something. I mean, you're missing part of what Rabbi Zira said. What he said was that we may be donkeys, but don't think we're like high-class donkeys, like the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer. I mean, certainly not that kind of donkey. That's way beyond us. And kichamarte the Repinchas ben Yoyer loyd mina. We certainly should not compare ourselves to the donkey of Repinchas ben Yoyer. I mean, take a look at that donkey. Chamarte the Repinchas ben Yoyer one time was stolen in the middle of the night by these burglars. So ganavta listoy balaylea, and that donkey was avda tamira gabantlata yami. So for 3 days they had it with them in their hideout. The donkey refused to eat anything. So after 3 days, they decided, you know what, let's just get her back to her house before she drops dead of starvation and stinks up the whole place. So they said, Amri, Avkina Minacha, get her out of here. If she dies here, we're going to have to move out of this hideout. So Delo Temud Gaban, so Avkunua, so they let her go. So she goes back, and she runs back to Rupirchus Ben Yoyer's home, and she's Kamala Altara Damara, so she stands there at the gate, and she starts braying, like donkeys do, Shariat Menahakat. Rupirchus Ben Yoyer hears her and says to his servants, oh my God, open up immediately for this poor, poor donkey. Oh my gosh, I guarantee you 3 days she hasn't eaten a damn thing. Patrinla, so they open up the gate, she comes on in, and Reb Pinchas ben Yoyer says, give her something to eat, quick. So they bring her some barley, Yavun Kamusa Orin. She refuses to eat even there, so they tell Reb Pinchas ben Yoyer, Rebbe, lo baita mechel, she doesn't want to eat. Oh, Malon, wait a second. Did you, metaknini nun? Did you take care of it? I mean, you put it through a sifter, you made sure it's clean. I mean, this donkey doesn't eat junk, you know. Is it like high quality? Yeah, in. Omar Lon va Arimtun Damyon. you took off Meiser, the Dmai, from it? They said, what? I thought we're not supposed to. Lokein Halfon Rebbe? Didn't Rebbe teach us that Alokeach, Lezera, and Lebehema, or Kemach, Leoreis, or Shemen, Lamaor, does not have to take off Dmai because you're not using it for human consumption? So it's Potter min Dmai. Why should we have taken off Dmai? Said Reb Pinchas Ben Yair, oh, come on, guys, man, but lahadalufta, this poor donkey, he machmarta al garma saga, she's very machmir, she's extremely frum, and she's not going to eat anything that's done. Yeah, you didn't take dmai from it? Well, you're going to give that to her? What, are you crazy? Sure, she's refusing to eat it. So sure enough, Arima and dmai, they took off the dmai, and then she ate. And that's how we knew that she would never have eaten anything by these ganavim, because they for sure gave her stuff that wasn't properly meisered. So he understood she's going to be starving to death. He was just waiting till she came back home. She could give her something. Anyway, I tell you, says Reb Zira, I guarantee you we ain't like her, but we're going to see exactly. there was actually a Maisa, which proves that he was not like her. And then Psachya, the next thing we had in the Mishnah was Psachya al Hakini. So why did they call him Psachya? Remember that there were two ways of referring to him. Mordechai Bilshan, which is a lotion of Bilshan, means nowadays we use that term to mean a researcher in languages. So a Bilshan is somebody who is, that's his field, is language. And he was called Psachya for the same reason, because he was Pesach, he was able to open up Dvorim v'dorshan, as the Gemara is going to say. So we called him Psachya Borei Magadol Kochol Shel Oto Ish. This guy was really, he was brilliant. He was able to be Poteach Dvorim v'dorshan. He could open up things that really people did not understand the implications of. And he was Yodea B'Shivim Lashon. He also knew 70 languages. Now, the Rambam understands B'Shivim Lashon to mean not all 70 primal languages, but that he knew a significant number of 70 languages, which is Rov, because that's how he paskins the Gabi Sanhedrin, and therefore the Lachamisha was Medayik, that maybe that's from the Lashon of Bishivim Lashon. Anyway, and this is a Braita, because Tani Sanhedrin Chiesh Bashnaim Shecholim Ledaber, if it has two members of Sanhedrin who are able to communicate in all 70 languages, or as the Rambam learns, in Rov, Kulam Ruyam Lishmo, and the rest of the Sanhedrin, even though they can't speak, but they can understand, so that they never need an interpreter, because you're not allowed to be Mikabel Eidos through an interpreter, because, for obvious reasons. I mean, it's the opposite of Eidos. So that is a Sanhedrin that is Ru'uyel Sanhedrin. That's a minimal level Sanhedrin. If you have three of the Dayanim are able to communicate in all 70, according to Rambam, in most of the 70, so then it's Benonit. It's like a middle class Sanhedrin. Arba'av, it's got four of the members of Sanhedrin, or Bekiyim and Shivim Lashon, then it's considered to be a Sanhedrin Chachama. And the truth is that in Barnea's neighborhood, in Yavne, they actually did have, oh, Barnea's not even here. What am I sitting here making fun of him? Oh, yes, he is. There he is. Okay. So in Yavne, there were four. And who were the four? Ben Azai and Ben Zoma and Ben Chachinoi and Reb Elazar Ben Matir. Some say it was Hananya Ben Chaniloi. But in any event, fine. There are different Girsos in the Bavli, and who the people were. Now, if you want to give an example of Psachya, the way he was able to understand what was going on, so I'm Rav Chista, once, Yovsha Eretz Yisrael, there was a terrible drought, and V'lo yadu me'echan la'vi omer, they didn't know where they were able to get barley that had actually survived the drought. So there was this Elaim that was there, so he was unable to talk, but he put one of his hands on roofs, so chad yad al gagot, and another one he put on huts, tzrifim, which are, you know, low-quality huts that are built almost like a tent, but they use, like, wood that they tell, like a teepee kind of thing.
Lean-to.
Lean-to, okay. So lean-to, there's the, yeah. But it's not a square by it. Haitinu kamei de Ptachia. So they brought this guy to Ptachia to try to figure out what he's trying to tell him. And he said to them, look, there's got to be a place that's called Gagot Tzrifim, or Tzrifim Gagot. And there actually was a place like that. And they went there, Azlataman, and they found that there was barley in that place. And Azlataman v'ashkechan. They claim that this has to do with the place that is called Tzrifim today. The famous, it was a very central bus stop for a long time. Now it's become the Tzrifim, the hospital, and everything else. Om Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Bon. There was another time when Nishtaf Kol Olam Kulo, and one Girsa has Kol Olam Kulo. But, I mean, Lemaisa, the Bavli says that these two Maisim were actually, took place during the Machlokas between the B'nai Chashmonoi and Yerushalayim. There was a whole problem in getting the Karbonas up. They used to pull up the Karbonas. It was part of that period. Also, the Girsa is not that the whole Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, if you use that Girsas of the Bavli, so then it says Nishtaf Eretz Yisrael on this one as well. Anyway, so they didn't know where they were going to be able to get, again, two Girsos, because in Menachos it says they didn't know where to get the Shtei Alechem. So anyway, there was another guy who was Elaine, and he could not communicate. And he would put one hand on his eyes, and he put another hand on a sukhra. A sukhra is the hole that you put the tzir into. So you put or a bolt either. So, but it's the female of a matched up bolt or tzir. It's a socket. And Aitino Lagabi Psachi, they brought him to Psachi, and he said to them, try to find a place called Ein Socher, or Socher Ayin, maybe. They did find some there. Then there was another Maisa where there were three women who brought Kinim. And one of them brings it in, and remember that you had to get a Chotemet and so on. So they needed to define precisely what the Kinim were for, because if it was a Nadav, obviously it would be Shtei Oilais, and if it was a cane for a Zova or so on, then it would be one Oila and one Chatas. So anyway, one of them says, I'm bringing this Le'inati. And one of them says, I'm bringing this Le'yamati. And one of them says, I'm bringing this Le'zivati. It was very unclear. So they assumed that the one who was saying Le'inati, Sovereign Neymar, Shofat K'mayan, she was like talking about the way that she had this terrible zivais and that her blood was flowing like an ayin being a mayan. And so but they, as we'll see, they had to pass by the determination of Psachia because he was alakinim and any suffix he had to paskin. And he said, that's not what she's saying. What she's saying is that I had a severe eye infection. I almost lost my eye, and I'm bringing this as a gift. And the one that said Le'yamati, which they also thought, they thought that it was a reference to blood flow, like a yam. And he told them, no, she is saying that she almost drowned at sea, and she wants to bring an eila. Zosho met Le'zivati, for sure, that's obviously a zava. And he said, no, she means a wolf. She means a zave. Not so, and that is the sensitivity to the accent and to the psychology was that he told him she meant at a wolf was after her child, and she was able to save him, and she wanted to bring an oila. Then Ben Achia, so he was in charge of the gastro problems in the Beis HaMikdash. So this was Dr. Ben Achia. And why were there so many problems? Because al yedei shehayu hakohanim halchim yechefim al haritzpah. So they would walk barefoot. And that definitely got them a little bit more, less capable of fighting off disease. So they were chilled. V'hayu ochlim basar. And they would eat a tremendous amount of meat, obviously. They weren't able to drink wine, which is what people would usually eat. And so the water always was not the best thing to drink. And because of that, Ayuboyim Lidei Choli Me'ayim, they would get a lot of intestinal problems. And this, Dr. Ben Achia, he knew what materials were good for Ma'ayanites and what was bad for Ma'ayanites, and he was able to assign them different alcoholic, maybe literally means chamar, it could just mean material, but anyway, he would know which yayin was good, which one, and which ones were bad.